I've got a big mouth and a couple of big families. So, we've got a half hour this morning to talk to you about a program called Promise Verification. I'd love for any family with me who's been working for the last year and a half on this program at Kansas State, and we've been coming down with a free list. And Dave Henry, who's ranking their Perry Canvas, we're going to call on him a couple of different points in our presentation to try to have him give you some practical experiences about what's been like going through this program. Dave, I don't know if you want to call on here and sit, and we'll get there as we go through. We've got a couple handouts. And these will, we've got an example of a channel passport that this group uses. And we're going to talk about that as we go through the presentation. We've got some publication on Project Verified, the 20-hour extension program. And we've got some business cards that have got some websites of where you get some of this information. And a little bit about the Agriculture Market Resource Center, which funded this particular project. So if you want to take one of those and pass them around. And, we're going to try to keep this kind of a conversational tone this morning. I'm going to start out talking a bit about why we're going to put this on it. Renee's going to talk more about what some of the issues that we went through. And then Dave's going to kick in at different points where what it meant as a producer going through this process verified program. And then after the break, you're going to hear from Jim Reba, who's actually the person in charge of the department, that the office at USDA, that actually goes out and does some of his audit procedures. We've tried to put together a program here to look at. Well, real quick, why did we get involved in this program? About 4 years ago, I remember reading in Feedstuff an article, and they talked about how the fact that TSF in Missouri got process verified by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the Pork Division. I remember reading myself, what the heck does that mean? You know, a lot of Feedstuff put this little blurb in there about TSF being process verified. And so I thought, you know, these guys will be pretty progressive. Maybe they're doing something that I ought to learn something about. And so we started digging into the Process Verified program. And then several years ago, we got some funding through the Agriculture Market Resource Center from USDA to actually take a group of producers through this Process Verified program. And the reason we did that was we wanted to learn, number one, how a group of producers go through and do this, and number two, what are some of the costs and benefits of going through something like this. And about a year ago, then, when the sole issue of pool legislation came up, TSF was the first person, and TSF again, they said, you know what, no problem, we supply the pool, and so we thought, you know, this is something that's pretty important, we think, and we think we've got some information out there that other groups of producers can use as they go through some of their own operations. So we wanted to learn more about process verification, we wanted to gain knowledge about USDA programs. As Jim was talking about, this thing has become more and more popular among producer groups. And they're getting more and more questions, and they've reorganized their office a little bit to try to take that into account. And we've got whole countries out there. The country of Uruguay in South America is trying to get their whole country process verified in their national meat program. And one of my former graduate students is heading up that effort down there. And we started thinking about what a small country is doing, trying to get all their ranchers and all their partners together to get process verified. It really makes you think about what's going on in the world here. So, I'm going to let Renee talk about a program that we've worked with in Kansas that's involved a retailer, a packing plant, and a group of producers of which Dave is a member. And Renee, because he's worked with us pretty intimately for the last year and a half, why don't you talk us through this relationship and partnership with some of the things that you've been working on?
Okay, well, can I hear you first of all? No? Is that better? Okay. The group that we work with is called the Houston Family Farm. And they consist of, as Mike said, a producer group, a processor, a small processor, and then the retailer market at the end, giving it to the consumer. And then Kansas State University was involved in developing the process for education system. Our national beef cooperative consists of about 25 producers. So in some of these things that we're talking about, keep in mind that process verification can occur with all different sizes of groups. It's really whatever fits your goal. They supply beef solely to the Nature Family Farms program, and some of them have larger operations so that the beef that they supply is just a portion of their total production. Each of the producers supplies about 40 head of beef to the program per year. And as I said, the operations vary in size, location, and goals. So many of them have different goals that they want to achieve at their operation. One thing they have in common is that they all follow the agreed upon production recipes. In forming this group, they decided that they wanted to differentiate themselves from other groups that were out there. If you go to the grocery store, you'll notice there's many different brand names that are making different production claims or saying that their beef is different for this or that other reason. And the Nature Family Farm, their group wanted to differentiate themselves from the other groups. The main considerations were that beef tastes good, it's environmentally conscious in its production. The main treatment of animals is something that they like to keep in mind, as well as local production, and they don't use hormones or subtherapeutic antibiotics in the production of their animals. Now, a good thing for them to be able to do with all of their production requirements that they want to have is to have a third party process verification system in place. USDA has this process verification system. And one thing that you might find with in this type of a group, when ultimately their ultimate customer is the consumer, the consumer can identify with USDA and they trust USDA as being a third party verification system. The process verified system is based on ISO 9000. And it provides third-party audits for a fee. And they also verify that self-imposed label claims are credible. Now, you notice that I said the claims are self-imposed. When you have a group of people that want to become process verified, that group needs to decide on the label claims or rules that they want to make for their production system. And they can be as simple or complex as the group chooses. You'll find out later on the claims for this group are fairly complex compared to some other groups. Some groups, their process verification system exists to verify that all of their cattle are of a certain breed. So you can go anywhere from that to having the type of claims that I'll later explain to you. The group wanted their claims to be valuable to the consumer, and that's why they ended up choosing the claims that they need to choose. And they also wanted their claims to reflect what they're already doing in their production practices. And that's why all these producers came together in the first place, because they did have common production practices. So I guess our first question for David is, why did you decide to participate in this program?
Well, the reason I got in here is I wanted to find just my life, I shouldn't be doing that. Because I wanted to find a better way to market my cattle. I wanted to be rewarded. And I got introduced to my Gene Edelman, who was about the president of our co-op. And he just got my start farming for me. It's worked out fairly good. It's no get rich scheme, co-op.
Were you already doing that for beef production? It's about $5,000. It depends on how many producers you've got and how much auditing you've got to do. We're going to describe the audit process here later. For this particular group, it was about $5,000 what they spent to go through that process.
Again, it varies on the size of the group and how many locations that they have to go through to figure out. Now, the pastor's verifying claim to go over the next for the Nature Family Farm. One of their claims is that the animals are raised on local family-sized farm operations, and with that, the animals must be traceable back to the original owner. So, as some of you seen with the passports that we handed out, those half sheets of paper that are 3,000 copies, that is one of the pieces of paperwork that we use to keep track of each animal. Each animal has a passport with their production history on it.
Yeah,
do
you
continue
to have
that
family
five
farm operation?
Well,
Dave,
you better do that one.
That's a real tough issue. Most of our producers have anywhere from 40 head up to 200 head. We generally look at it in our co-op business. You spend the work yourself and then the outside input or management, and that's kind of our rough definition of it. That's a real issue, letting the family farm.
And another one thing that we do have in the requirements is that it has to be less than 1,000 head. There's no confined animals without operating allowed in this owner.
I think the other thing is the retailer wants to be able to bring these producers into the store. So when you think about what Ted was talking about in terms of adding value, I look at this and I would say you've got to look like a farm. Right? So when you go to the store, if you're working or handling with the demonstration, as long as you look like what a stereotypical rancher should look like, that probably fits the definition of what the local family's size is.
Claim that we have on our label is that there are no growth hormones used, additional growth hormones used in the production of these animals. That's pretty straightforward. No subtherapeutic antibiotics, and after the finishing phase is done, which is basically saying that within 60 to 90 days, no antibiotics are allowed to be used on these animals for treatment at any time. They're set 100% vegetarian and rested. And some of you are, I know, you're all laughing at me. But when you put that on the label, people really like to see that. People don't like, and especially with this BSE outbreak in the last 30 days, people don't like to think that the meat that they're eating, the cows that the meat came from, were eating other animals. That just doesn't sound good to people. So by putting this 100% vegetarian ration on the label, it's something that we found that people like to see on there.
Again, if you've got a better word, I'm sure these producers would love to hear it. This is one of the few groups in the United States that could actually say, for those of you who read the positive press after the single cow in December, a lot of people were saying organic meat was better. Well, they can't claim organic meat is safer because organic products could be fed with some animal byproducts. So this group, by using that phrase, their meat managers, the day after the mad cow thing, could reassure their customers, look, there's no danger of any of the meat that you're eating out of here would have had come from a BFD animal. So I think it was the retailer, again, that really wanted something like that when they went to this group.
As I stated earlier, there's no antibiotics allowed to be used on these animals during the initial phase, which includes ionophores. At this point, there's a little percent of cars is that monitoring on the chat, but that's where we're at right now. And there are also growth hormones verified from producer distribution orders, and then the processors really is to get the feed dry aged for 10 to 14 days. It's sold fresh to the grocery store, it's never frozen, and then it's sold fresh to the consumer as well.
I'm going to interject one more here. So the passport you've got is a generic passport, and that makes four label claims. This group is going through seven. We thought if we made some public education material, four is probably about the most you could possibly look about doing. And for many groups, it may only be one. It may only be the source of origin verified. But the passport you've got only looks at four different claims on there. What do you guys think about that passport? Is that something that you could really put together for your operation?
Yeah,
A lot of you probably already got that data. You may have it in your head. You may have it on a card. You may have it in a spreadsheet if you're a little more formalized. So a lot of things we're talking about are things producers were already doing. It's just a matter of trying to codify them in some way that they could create some type of audit trail that someone like Jim Davis could come out and take a look at.
And for this,
the passport really helps when delivery manual and then you have a copy, they have a copy, and the program can receive a copy. So all that information is there, and then a paper trail. Okay.
Why
would
the
troops
try
to go and
receive
the documentation? First of all, we wanted to assure that the consumer that they knew where to be was coming from. That's part of the deal. They also, and they thought about education. I like that. We discussed that. We figured that was something everyone understood. You say soybeans, you know, you're having a consumer that have any idea what soybeans. They have no concept of that. And the other thing is to verify that this is processed and have a name there and know your process. And it's really interesting that when we have in-store demos, the main thing to me is I can talk to a consumer. They act like they're not interested and really not listening to you. They'll walk by that many times, they'll look at your product, they'll go on down, do a little more shopping, they come back and buy it. It's just showing that process of thinking about what you say. And you're there to meet them. You're not some, you know, fine that just says, well, this is what we do, you're actually going to meet them, actually over there.
Now, working with us, the program put together a process verified manual, and with that process verified manual, there are about 20 process verified points that the USDA has in place that have to be followed for any group to get process verified. Now, this manual can be sometimes large and somewhat complicated. And if you're working with a group of producers like we were, we wanted to take that manual and make it simpler and put in the information that they need to know to use in their production operation. So that's what we did, and we came up with a training guide to accompany the process verified manual. The major record keeping portions include the passports, which you all have a copy of. They're not the exact passports, again, that your nature family farm uses. It's more of a generic version that can be used by anybody. They have internal reviews that have to be performed on a regular basis so that you can ensure that all of the producers are following the practices that everybody has agreed upon. And then there are also records and affidavits for purchase cattle that were bought outside of the program. So you have an avenue for people to do that if for some reason one area weren't able to carry enough cows to have passed for the sale to the co-op all year.
They started out in the first manual about a year and a half ago, and it was what, about an instant?
Yeah.
When you think about trying to get group access, and everybody wants to have every part of it, and they started out with a one inch document. Here's all the stuff. Let's figure out real quick, no producer wants to do 1 inch. We've got it down to about 30 pages. We have a website with a generic manual, but it's under 30 pages for this. For the manual and then the training guide, probably about 15, 18 pages that we'll have there that you've got to have as part of this package. So we'll have these materials up. So they started out big and then got real small. And Jim Riegel will tell you that you'd like to do something even less than 30 pages. Make his job a lot easier. So.
When I was working on this process verification manual written and got the training guide completed, my job was to go around to the producers and to take this program to them and explain to them how all the records keep in work and how the system was supposed to go. And so, David, what did you think of that training and what was
the rest? Well, it was actually fairly simple. She came by and she showed me the manual and we went over it. And at first, it was a little bit scary. Once you started understanding that it was just a simple process of doing certain things, it wasn't that hard at all.
What do you think of the record keeping?
It's relatively easy. We're probably going to have to get more detail in the future on the grade bill, and we'll address those issues when they come up.
How many hours was the training, David? How much time did you spend training?
45 minutes, an hour and a half.
I was trying to spend keeping track of passport information and the other aspects per animal with the ballpark figures.
Probably 15 minutes. Depending on how intentional you get. Right now, some of our producers are like, you're not traced back to an individual cow. You're just taking care of their offspring. If you want to go on back and if you want to verify the breed that you have and the bull that you have, you get more labor intensive as far as you can. At this point, we're not requiring that. We have a good future.
How handy are you with computers and things? I mean, this time you have a whole bunch of computers. Classes in school or something? To
My wife's doing a computer, but I'm not much of a computer fan. They don't work that soon.
That's one thing you'll find with the groups. They're very traditional to for the most part, and have many things other than just cattle on their plate. And a lot of them don't have computers, and that's been, you know, a little bit of a challenge for us to get information communicated with everybody. But it all works out for us, and I think, you know, the more technology you have incorporated into the group that you're involved with, the easier it'll be to get this information back and forth to people.
I'd like to claim that we took the hardest group of producers to work with. We could learn how to work with a hard group, which would make it easier. We didn't do it that way, but it still seemed that way at times.
I don't want to say that, but sometimes it was a little tough. Our first audit was September of 2002, and two auditors came out and visited states. In the end, I think the audit took 4 days. They visited two farms, one of the grocery store locations, and then also the processing facility. And discussions were held to find out what the program was using to fulfill the actual USDA requirements. They basically went at each of those two locations. They went through the requirements that we had set up for ourselves and asked about our paperwork that we would place to ensure that we do those requirements. And, you know, they went out and looked at different pens, and, you know, when you say, yeah, we did take all our cattle, we went out and they made sure your cattle had your tag on them, at least the ones that are involved in the program. So it wasn't, you know, I think there was a little bit of a stigma that it was going to be really scary to have these auditors come out. You heard the word auditor, and it just makes you cringe a little bit. Well, it wasn't like that at all. They were very open to find out more what we were doing, and in the end, they helped us to improve our process verification system so that it's more in line with what we need to have in place now. And we're still awaiting process verification at this time. We'll be going through another audit soon. We've made all the changes that they asked for, and
I think it's sort of, Bernie hasn't talked much about the retail part of this, but we did training with producers and we did training with meat managers. Now, if you think you all are real independent people, you ought to see a meat manager. Try to get 45 minutes of their time, and they just got to get their turnover. They're just, you know, we want to talk to people, we just want beef, wrap it up, we want to take out our packs and stuff on the shelf. They are very independent people, but in the long run, the meat managers came up and they toured the farm. There's a bunch of things these group producers did to really try to get these meat managers educated. And they've become some of the best sellers when it comes to meat now because they actually know more about it and can talk more intelligently about it. But it's pretty interesting trying to go work with meat managers. At the university, we don't do a lot of work with those guys. We go out to extension meetings with producers, but we never do an extension meeting for meat managers. And I understand why now, but they do want to learn, you know, they're becoming, they've got answers coming on BFC, you know, December 25th and so forth. They had a lot of questions, and I think there's a lot of things that we could do in education with those guys that could really help the beef industry.
Another thing I might mention, there's a lot of, you know, in the big grocery store chain system, meat managers are people that tend to get overlooked. There's definitely a hierarchy there. And there's little things you can do for them that will make them supportive of your product. You know, just simply taking them out, and what we did one time, we had a big bus. They put them all on a bus. And we took them out to a couple different farm locations and showed them what our program was all about. And I think that really did a lot to educate them as to what we're really doing out there.
Question? How many
years did you get involved
in this? 25. How many people
Well, that's actually what I was going to get to next. We don't have a slide to explain this. I'm just putting here. The processor is also, there's Zaya and Akash. She and her husband own a processing facility. It's very small, and they do all the processing for this group. And she is also the marketing manager for the entire program. And she's the main contact between the co-op and the grocery store, and has done all the work to get this program into the grocery store, which, let me tell you, is not easy. But she's been very persistent and has been in there all the time. She's always keeping them happy. But we also have the president of the cooperative. He is the one that keeps track of slaughtering animals. So each week, he's the one that makes sure that 40 head are delivered that week. I'm sorry, 20 head.
Yeah, I can help you out. It's kind of difficult. You start out, we want to do that 10 head a week, we're up to 30, sometimes 40 head a week now. And it's difficult because we have smaller producers. There are animals on already at the same time. Some guys want to market once a year. It's a real job flying. And what we've been doing to fill those spots, when we happen to be short, we go through another producer that may not belong to our co-op. We've got to keep our market. We have to find an affidavit that his cattle are treated the same way, and we verify that. And we'll purchase them and fill the spot. We don't want to do that. And what we look for in the future to help alleviate that problem of scheduling, we look to have one of our producers that will maybe keep 60 head that's on feed and start from various times. So we had one producer we can call up and get 5 head short of because of that problem. Not everyone's going to have enough to eat for the same time. And also, when the store has promotions, they want more meat. They'll go from maybe 30 head to get the other 50 head. And they just recently asked us to guarantee them a certain number of heads per year. And that's going to help them, and it will help us in the long run, which will make it a little more difficult. We have to have, right now, as I stated earlier, the producers only require to market so we can market more than that. But if the store knows how many is coming in, they're going to know their marketing program around the number of weeks they're going to be laying on that. The scheduling is a problem, real problem.
And more importantly, the supermarket buys the whole carcass, they're not buying boxed beef. And so they will find, they're trying to find markets for some of the other cuts that don't sell. They can sell 100 head a week if they're just on face. They can't keep the face on the shelf. The supermarket is really working them to try to find what do you do with some of these other things like a chuck and a hamburger for which people won't pay a premium for on an all-natural beef hamburger, for example. They've done things like help them develop recipes for frankfurters and Polish sausage and pre-cooked roasts and things. But the limiting thing is they could sell a whole lot more cattle. They just got to find out what to do with the rest of the carcass, which doesn't have some of the value characteristics that you need.
You're doing an in-store demo, and you manage to come up to me. If I need to show you something, he took me back in the hearing. What am I supposed to do with these cows? I said, well, sell it. He said, it's 2 pounds bigger than you might sell. And he was really upset about that. He said, we're going to lose money on these grizzlies because they're 2 pounds bigger than what the consumer wants. I didn't even think about a brisket being a problem. I don't see the barbecue on or cooking, and it's not a problem. He was quite happy. He told me back there, and he showed me over there. See, we're losing money on that. We'll make it up. We want those briskets smaller.
And that's
very important. And they will talk to you. Some of those things will consider the situation.
Part of the question I asked is the answer, but as you as a person selling, do you get paid for grades? I mean, do they grade those animals in there? And then the other part of this, you can answer that too, is everybody set on a specific feed program where they start the animals at the same time and take them through, or?
We're not on a specific feed program. They generally, we most have to start at 700 pounds. They produce an average of we don't have a specific feed program other than we get corn and soybeans and let them be very similar from what other beef recommendations we do. Now, what was the first part of the question?
Well, belt along with the grade is
on the grade. Okay.
Is really painful because if you don't have everybody on the same team program and not all the same unit, you're going to have different grades going in there. So this goes back to what he was talking about: how do you get rid of product that isn't exactly the same?
So that the last 6 months we went strictly on private school. Before that, we were doing individual cut grades, which made it very difficult for the prospect because we had to market according to that way. And it was very difficult for the store because then you had to pick a cut method. The situation had to go to a certain store because that market could handle it. And now you had to go to a store that had a use of that a little more effective. Now we're strictly going on the carpet grade itself, the hanging carpet. And we'll pay the set value on that. And then recently, the in-out chain has talked about they want to set a minimum price and a maximum price, and we'll cut that between that for the market.
You've got something for everybody to do to choose what they want to
do. Right. Well, and before, when we had the minimum price and then the quality or the yield would be higher, we had some producers that if they had a group of guests to look at, they got the lower price, and they were very upset about it. There was no premium. Now they've asked us to consider the same premium and then have a maximum price that was much less than that. Which would be easier for everybody, including the store. Thank you for that.
Can you talk about this graph here real quick? Let's figure this out. Where are you folks at?
Last year we averaged $1.35. We were above the average. And that's when we most of the year was on that individual yield.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Can you explain the 180 spike there?
Yes, actually, and that has a lot to do with our pricing system in the past. As Dave said, all the cuts were, each cut had a price, for instance, the ribeye. That cut had a certain price, and whatever the weight of the ribeye was for that animal, that's how much they got charged that price. And for each of the cuts, there were about 15 cuts that an animal was priced based on. And so one week, one producer is going to deliver cattle, and this, for instance, if you have our lower quality, he's going to get a lower price in that given week, even though the prices for the particular cut stayed the same. They never changed. I think they changed twice in the last 2 years. And that was only for a couple, but for grunts, and that was usually to raise the price. So the spikes are basically because of different people delivering cattle and how their cattle perform in that week. One more question.
You've been selling cattle based on your label claim of the co-op. Why are you going to certification?
It's not a process verifying. Look. So that's my question.
If you've been successful, which obviously you are, without certification, without system, my question is, why certify?
To distinguish ourselves from the rest of the thing. We have to be distinguished, but some being better than we will have a natural product. Everybody got a natural product. You see it all over, you see it advertised all over. We want to talk to verify, so we can say that we can guarantee you that this way. We're not saying it's a natural product.
And grocery stores also is kind of the main component behind that.
The retailer wants to make their beef their store label beef and differentiate it somehow. And the retailer about 2 years ago said, this is the way we think we can differentiate ourselves, is by being able to make these label claims that nobody else can do in the area of Kansas City where they market their beef at. And so it is being driven by the retailer. And they could tell them that for 3 years the retailer knows that they're going through this process. And so they knew there was an end in sight, so they would start encouraging to do it. So it wasn't like they were doing it. The retailer knew they were working towards this verification process. And it was just part of the package. And they said, you know, we'll work with you on finding value for it. In exchange, you've got to set up some things that are auditable and verifiable if we're going to work to try to identify a market for value for this.
I think the other thing you have to remember, anytime you deal with, if you're dealing with a corporation, they want to pay for that. We've kind of got to realize that. Anybody's doing this business, you've got to have to pay for it. You've got to be able to say this is it and this is how you're going to do it.
we need to stay on time here real quick. We're going to have a website. He's actually addressed with a whole bunch of materials out here for those of you that are interested in this project verified. We'll have a training guide, the manual, some other publications to go with that. We've also done some work, again, with meet managers, trying to get people to do forms and meetings. We've set up a pictorial training guide. So instead of writing out, here's what you got to do, you take a picture, it's a lot easier for people to understand pictures, and so there's different ways of educating people on how to do this. So we'll have a website with a bunch of this stuff. Again, as Jen talked about, there's no sense doing this unless there's incentives out there. For this group, for this type of beef, there is an incentive. But the supermarkets, they're working with the Kansas City. Not everybody will want this type of beef. But there is a market out there, and these guys will find a way of getting a niche into this particular market. So, we'll be around to take questions at break, but I really don't want to take time for the next speaker because we've really got some great people up here and really want to get through that. So, Ken, I'm going to let you introduce the next speaker.